Richter slipped his arm down the cool shaft of the dryer vent, feeling the dampness of the metal through the latex glove. He slid the bolt lock, gave the door a shove, and was inside. Locking the door behind him, he reattached the dryer hose to the vent cover. Let the police work a little to find out how he'd gotten in. It took a moment for his eyes to adjust to the darkness. Richter breathed in the basement smells of detergent and mold, and was overpowered by the pungent odor from a cat litter box. A scant amount of light from the casement window outlined the stairs leading up to the first floor. The door at the top of the staircase had been left open for the cat. Perfect. How nicely the city of Boston's streetlights lit up the first floor. A narrow hallway led to the living room with its French doors. Richter entered the room, careful not to bump into anything. The walls were pale, although he couldn't make out the color. Artwork by a child with some talent hung carefully framed and matted on each wall. A vase on the coffee table held dried roses and Queen Anne's lace, a nice touch, the sort of thing grandmother would have enjoyed. It was a comfortable room. He could see himself relaxing on the couch, watching one of his old movies. He moved out of the light and stepped into the dining room, stopping to look at the family pictures on the mantel. The built-in hutch, with its leaded glass doors, was filled with old-fashioned teacups and saucers. The dining room led into the kitchen and back around to the front hall where he had entered. He'd completed his private tour of the lovely old Victorian. Now he had more important things to attend to. Richter made his way up the stairs. The moonlight shining through the stained glass window on the landing created a kaleidoscope of muted color on the pine floors. The stairs creaked, but at midnight Susan McCarthy would be in a deep sleep. Her bedroom light had gone out 2 hours earlier. Richter walked down the carpeted hall. He turned the cold glass doorknob, and the door to Susan McCarthy's bedroom yawned open. Chapter 2. Assistant District Attorney Connie Dargett sped through another red light before turning onto Prospect Hill Road in Roslindale, one of the old neighborhoods of Boston now being taken over by trust fund babies. This was one of the few perks of his job. The pay was terrible, but who else besides a cop could fly around the city in the middle of the night with total disregard for traffic laws? He had activated his emergency lights. The wigwags, the strobes, the flashbacks. Driving to a murder scene made Connie feel alive, like a kid sledding down the Blue Hills, not knowing if he'd be able to stop before shooting out onto the highway below. He stopped in the middle of the street, a few houses down from number 12. That was as close as he could get. He left the flashbacks on so the cops wouldn't tow the Crown Vic. Two ambulances were situated in front of the house, with a half-dozen police cruisers blocking incoming traffic. It was warm for February, close to 50 degrees at 2 o'clock in the morning. A suit jacket was all he needed over his shirt and tie. Most of the residents of the quiet, middle-class neighborhood were outside, but the extensive yellow tape kept them a good distance away. Connie overheard the grumblings of the crowd as he made his way toward the scene. He played up to his audience, brushing past them with a practiced expression of intense focus.
"Why won't they tell us anything?" a woman asked.
"I don't know, but it's a bad sign when the paramedics are still waiting on the sidelines," said a man in pajama bottoms and a sweatshirt.
"They're probably all dead," the woman said, her voice rising. "I've seen this kind of thing on TV. If the victims are dead, then their bodies get treated like a crime scene."
TV can teach you something after all, Connie thought. The media had taken over the parts of the street that were not taped off. Television reporters were interviewing neighbors, fishing for sound bites for the morning news. Connie flashed his credentials to a uniformed cop and moved toward the crime scene. As one of the young prosecutors handpicked by the district attorney to represent the office at all murder scenes, Connie had access to a world most civilians never imagined. Members of the homicide response team were supposed to oversee the integrity of each investigation. In reality, they stayed out of the way and let the homicide detectives from the BPD run the show. Connie flipped the smooth black leather billfold with its gold badge back into his jacket pocket. After his first few homicides, he noticed that the police gave him more access to crime scenes, maybe because he looked the part of a seasoned detective. With his cleanly shaven head and BPD notepad, he blended right in. And he was a city kid, like most of the cops. Not some rich carpetbagger from the suburbs who had been afraid to come into the city until his politically connected parents got him a job in the DA's office. Connie skirted the taped perimeter. He never walked through a crime scene unless he checked in with the detectives first. He saw a cop he recognized and walked over to get an update. After a quick handshake, the officer leaned in close. "Connie, one Vic, a female. Ocean Frank before we got here. That's all I know. They haven't told us shit other than to keep the crowd back." "How'd she die?" Connie asked. "No idea. Who's here from homicide?" "Mooney and Alvis. They're inside." "I should have known," Connie said. "Only Sergeant Mooney would close off this much of a street as a crime scene. He's got half a Razzie taped off."
"That's why he's the best." The cop pointed toward the side porch. "That looks like Alvis now."
Connie had met Detective Angel Alvis on his first day as a virgin prosecutor in the South Bay District Court. Not even 4 months ago, Alvis had been promoted to homicide, but the two of them had stayed in touch. Connie watched as Alvis directed two patrolmen to the back of the house before turning toward the street. Connie raised a hand to catch Alvis's attention. Even at a murder scene at 2 a.m, the detective looked sharp in his tailored suit. They made eye contact, and Alvis waved him over.
"Good morning, Conrad," Alvis said, extending his hand.
"Please don't call me that," Connie said, shaking his hand. "You sound like my mother."
"Okay, Connie. Nice of you to show up."
Alvis looked pointedly at his watch.
"We've been here an hour.
The reporters made better time than you."